I'm Will Harris, and today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah, that cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, I've got a new buddy of mine, Justin Noel of 1534, proprietor and beverage director there, and also portfolio manager of Prestige Brands, which includes Oxley Gin and Corzo Tequila. Welcome to the show, Justin.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks.
I'm glad to have you on the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Cool, man. So we actually met pretty recently. A lot of times kids on my show are people I've known for a little while, and we had met in passing a few times, I think, and just around, you know, the whole scene and the whole industry, but I'm glad to get to know you recently and have you on the show.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, so
I was gonna say, it's been one of those things where like your name has come up and I've been around, and it was until recently first time we've actually been able to sit down and chat and actually get to know each other. So it was a pretty good, it was a highlight of the last couple months, man. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, pleasure's all mine. So to get started, let's talk a little bit about the brands that you manage. I mean, these are definitely like Oxley Gin. It's a very, very unique gin. I've had Paul Franich on the show, who is now in New Zealand, back in New Zealand where he's from, and he's a very cool guy. He was actually repping for 42 Below, which is New Zealand's like premier like vodka brand, but he was also working a little bit with Oxley, and that's when I first heard about it. But the process of making that gin is really unique. I mean, it's the only cold distilled gin or
right.
spirit
on right. the market. Yeah, that I the know. Only cold distilled spirit in the world right now.
So tell us a little bit about that process and what that means.
Well, cold distillation, which, you know, some people might know or may not know, is actually not a relatively new thing. It's actually been used for a while in making not medicine, but cosmetics and stuff like that. Yeah. So recently, spirits, you've seen a move towards different techniques in distillation and production, and Oxley is actually an 8-year process of trying to figure out how to create this product that actually is from start to finish completely clean, completely pure. We use cold distillation, which, in case people don't know, is basically the idea of putting something in a vacuum. We have a big vacuum machine that sucks out all the air in our still. Because of that, we can lower the boiling point to -5 degrees. And because we're not really cooking anything, we can use fresh botanicals because we're pulling off the elements at the rate that we want. So we keep the temperature between -5 and -8 degrees Celsius. And as a result, you get this really clean, crisp product that is relatively high in alcohol. It's 94 proof. But because we don't have heads and tails, when you smell it and you nose it and you taste it, it smells lighter than it is. It tastes lighter than it is. But as a result, the crispness and the quality is such that you can, it's almost one of the only gins that I know that you can almost drink straight.
Yeah.
Or on the rocks and really not have an aversion to it. There's a lot of great gins out there that I love in cocktail form, but if I was to actually drink it straight,
sure,
it's almost like drinking, you know, pine salt at some point. But and there's a lot of great gins out there, and I think with Oxley, because of our cold distillation method, we do get a nice crisp citrusy kind of a product that allows people to kind of to drink it straight or on the rocks, or and it works really well in cocktails. I mean, it's not overly juniper gin. It's a unique process, and you know, it's very labor intensive. We only produce about 240 liters every two runs. We run the still 5 times a week, So roughly we produce about 1,000 liters a week. So in terms of small batch production, when you talk about small batch spirits, I mean, we're really, really small batch.
Extremely small batch. So, tiny batch.
Yeah. We should a whole new category.
Tiny batch.
Extremely tiny batch. And that's worldwide. So, you know, we're producing 1,000 liters a week to be distributed throughout Europe, US, and Asia. So, I mean, that's a relatively small amount. But, you know, it's the gentleman who the company that distills it and the gentleman who distills it is, you know, it's a labor of love for him. The distiller, it's just one guy. So he's the one that puts all the botanicals into the neutral grain spirit at the beginning of every run. He's the one that cleans the still. He's the one that runs it. So, you know, in terms of like production, it's small batch and small operation. So,
yeah. And just, you know, for our listeners, can you kind of explain, like you said before, like being able to use like fresh botanicals, like as opposed to like what typically we're using, like dried botanicals in distillation? Like, obviously you hit on it a little bit, but I guess it's kind of almost self-explanatory, but as far as like, yeah. what are the benefits for using like,
when you use, I mean, a lot of people, don't realize that most gins that you drink this time of day or this time of age is
this time of day.
I drink gin at this time of day, anyways. But this time of age, they're almost always using dried.
Yeah.
And then when you get these really bold citrusy gins, mostly it's from the coriander that they're using, mm-hmm. More than the peels. So with what we do, you know, we can kind of use fresh ingredients, and as a result, you get this really bright kind of citrus flavor, yeah. notes, and it's representative of the actual fruits themselves, as opposed to the other dried botanicals that we're putting in there, like coriander or cassia root or something like that. So, you know, we have 14 botanicals in our gin, but the dominant flavor notes with Oxley, because of the freshness of the ingredients, tend to be the citrus peel. You get a bit of that peppery spice from juniper. And then we use a unique ingredient in our gin called meadowsweet. Mm-hmm. And actually what Oxley means is, in Anglo-Saxon, is ox is like a field, like to rest, and lay is a field of meadows. So basically Oxley means a field of meadows at rest. Like, and that they use that to describe basically in England, there's these large riverbanks of these white flowers, and they're called meadow sweets. So, we use the meadow sweet, and actually when you distill with meadow sweet, you get this kind of like almondy, hazelnutty kind of flavor. Mm-hmm. So with Oxley, you know, again, it kind of goes citrusy.
That definitely like mellows out, yeah. all the juniper too.
That's so, cool. And I mean, and I guess with what we do with the freshness, you know, and I can't speak about how other gins do their stuff, but because we use fresh botanicals, and you just, like I said, there's just a vibrancy. Right. It's again, if you're looking like, you look at it like how we do cocktails, you know, if you take something that's fresh versus something that's kind of like, you know, you have to like rejuvenate to get going, like, you know, some of sure. these prepackaged citruses and stuff like that, you could still make a really great cocktail out of that. I mean, I always feel like the person who's behind the stick is more important than in terms of executing the cocktail. But you and I both know, like, if you've got everything fresh versus yeah. some stuff that's like maybe a couple days old or something stuff that's like on its last legs, it's different.
Yeah, there are two cocktails that come to mind when you say that that I always wish that people would use fresh ingredients. First of all, Brown Derby.
Oh yeah.
Like, you, if you don't have like fresh, actual fresh grapefruit juice, like you might have to modify it with like a dash of lemon juice just to bring out the vibrancy right. of it. And then the Algonquin cocktail, which is, you know, it has pineapple juice and Ryan dry vermouth, and it's like, that's weird. So you always have to kind of like church it up with something.
Just never go to the Algonquin Hotel and get one.
Well, I know that's unfortunate too, that like all these namesake cocktails, I mean, with the exception of like maybe the Seelbach in Louisville, like then you can go there and get one, but you're not using any fresh ingredients.
Yeah, it's kind of depressing.
Hopefully you're using a new bottle of champagne, but
you hope. I mean, there's that one bartender at the Algonquin. I think he's been there since the Algonquin Round Table, He's about like 90 plus years old. No, it's slightly depressing. I'll be honest. Like, there's so many.
They still have that cat in the lobby, which is cool.
That's, you know, there's so much history in New York with regards to the cocktail culture, as you know, and a lot of these birthplaces of cocktails, like hotel lobbies and stuff like that. And you try to go to them, and you know, it's just like it's a 80, 90 year hangover from when they started and were, you know, the pioneers of the scene. And now, and it's like, it's a letdown. You mean you go in, you see this historic room, and you feel like, you know, because that's what we thrive on, you know, like at least, you know, when we do our history and our research, we're like, oh, this is awesome. I want to go see this place. And you go, and it's like,
then you go in, and there's like flat screens everywhere.
Yeah. Or like, you know,
it's still an old, they still have the original Brunswick bar, but then there are flat screens everywhere.
Yeah. Flat screen. And then you've got like the bartender who's, pouring things out of a storm pour that's like all pre-mixed, and you're like,
and typically like union, so they don't give a shit.
You know, it's hard, man. It's, you know, it can be insufferable at times. I mean, I went to King Cole Bar at the St. Regis, which is another great historical bar in New York, and you know, you go, and you know, they're charging pretty penny for these drinks, and you order like a classic cocktail, and you end up getting this ultra sweet or ultra bitter or ultra bad some cases cocktail, and you're just like, wow, this is you know, this is not how I imagined you know,
takes out the romantic ideal of what that actually is or was, you know.
I mean, it just comes to, it just goes to show that like people, I don't know if it's resting on the laurels or what, but you know, like you, I think you touched on it with regards to the union. I think once some of these spots, you know, became unionized, the passion, creativity, and or just the attachment to their traditions just goes out the window, and you know, and a lot of it just never recovered from, you know, from post prohibition. They just went right into you know, quick and easy mixes and stuff like that, and never recovered from it. So
totally, I mean, I feel like there's a change coming up with that, especially like speaking on hotel bars, especially with like you know, Julie Reiner taking on the program of the Monkey Bar, and you know, the Rum House and the Edison Hotel. I just had Michael Neff on a couple of weeks ago, and then also, you know, for instance, the Ace Hotel, which you worked with on the Breslin and the Ace Bar, and I feel like that appeal of like the hotel bar is starting to come back, you know, but it's just, it's gonna take a little bit, you know. You've got the Standard also.
Yeah, I mean, we did the me and my business partners, we did the Ace Hotel, we also did the Royalton Hotel. We relaunched that cocktail program last year. No, I definitely agree. I mean, and then Megan Dorman did a project actually, I think, at the Iroquois, right across the street from the Royalton Hotel. So I agree. I mean, I think the hotel bar, I mean, there's that romanticized idea about hotel bars.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, Ace is more of like a modern interpretation of it.
Sure, but I mean, but the spirit is there, no pun intended.
Yeah, yeah, no, it definitely is. I mean, you know, it's, I mean, it has all the facets that you look for in a bar anyways. It's, you know, hotel lobbies are, you know, places where people are meeting, there's social interaction, there's usually some form of entertainment, and at a hotel, you're staying there, you're trying to make it your home.
Yeah.
So you know, you want,
my home has a bar in it,
right? You want creature comforts. You want to be able to go downstairs and grab a drink and either schmooze with your business partners or entertain your wife or girlfriend or your boyfriend, and you know, and not have to like travel so far away. So, you know, I think the social aspects of the hotel bar bringing back that romanticized view, like, of the hotel lobby.
Yeah.
I'm particularly stoked about, because, you know, I travel a lot and I know you travel a lot for work. So it's always nice to be able to go grab a drink, congregate, meet up with friends in that spot before, you know, heading out or going to dinner or doing something else. So it's, you know, it's nice to have that.
Yeah, it's a very like You kind of feel like you're living in a movie sometimes when you're at the hotel bar. You know,
oh, yeah.
Very Wes Anderson movie style. You kind of like almost take on, like in your travels, you almost take on like a different persona. Like,
yeah, easily.
You find some new quirks. And I always find that like anytime you're at like a hotel bar, you end up drinking something that you would never drink at your regular bar. Like you'll just call out a different cocktail or you'll like make something up on your own. Like I remember one time I was at a hotel bar and I decided I wasn't in a very good mood, and I ordered a rye on the rocks with a few dashes of Tabasco. I was like, huh, that's weird. Why did I just think of doing that? But it's actually delicious.
Hey, you know, I think there's that escapism that comes with that, too, when you're outside of your comfort zone, you're away from where you live and stuff like that. I mean, I like to go when I'm on vacation or away for work. I like to... When I go to lobby bars, take on a different personality.
Yeah,
you totally. Know, like dress up like almost like Tom Cruise and what's his name from Rain Man, Dennis Hoffman, and kind of really do like, you know, snazzy dress up and kind of play a character or just kind of like mess around with like being in that lobby, being a character.
Yeah,
because totally. You know, a lot of the time when you go to hotels and lobby bars or you come across characters, you're never really coming across that person that is actually who they are. You're coming across the persona that they want you to meet.
Yeah.
So I give into that a little bit and do the same thing. So.
Absolutely. Speaking of escapism, we're going to escape for just a moment and we're going to come right back and we'll continue talking with Justin Noel.
White Oak Pastures is a 146-year-old multi-generational family farm that works in cooperation with nature to produce artisan meat that is safe, healthy, nutritious, and good to eat. Without fail, we ensure that our production practices are economically practical, ecologically sustainable, and that the animals are always humanely treated. We never falter in our determination to conduct our business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte in the studio. My new buddy, Justin Noel, of Prestige Brands. That would be Oxley Gin and Corzo Tequila, which we kind of trailed off there in the first part. We talked a lot about gin, then we kind of talked about hotel bars. A little bit about Corzo Tequila. I actually worked with you guys at the last year's Ultimate Spirits Challenge. That was cool. I always liked the packaging. It looks very like kind of Frank Lloyd Wright, mm-hmm. like as far as the pour spout and the waterfall thing goes. But tell us a little bit about Corzo Tequila.
Well, you're not too far off with regards to like the design of the bottle. Gentleman who designed the bottle is actually the guy who designs a lot of Chanel perfume packages and cologne packages. It's a guy by the name of Frank Barini. And then the pour top is actually designed after a water fountain in Cabo.
Oh, wow. Cool.
But Corzo's a...
Nailed it.
Corzo's a unique tequila expression. I think a lot of bartenders in the community... we get really fixated on tradition and stuff like that, and we're very open to different expressions of ryes and whiskeys and gins and vodkas and whatnot. And then we get really, I guess, traditional when it comes to Mexican products like mezcal and tequila. But we triple distill, And then we do something that's very unique, and that's double age. So almost, you know, except for the silver, all of our tequilas, the Repo and the Añejo, see both new American oak and new French oak. Right. And the silver rests in new American oak for 3 months before we distill twice more. So really kind of like trying to blend that marriage of agave and wood. Really try to like, we call it double aging, double mellowing. So really trying to just mellow out some of the harsher notes that you get with certain types of tequila. We are Highland tequila made in Aranda. So our agaves are, you know, as you know about Highland tequilas are a little bit sweeter, more floral than your lowland tequilas. So, so what we do is, you know, we distill once, put everything, our silvers, our Repo Añejo, it all starts off the same, goes into new American oak, sits there for about 53 days. Then we take it out. Silver gets bottled after we distill twice more. The other products we distill twice more, and then we stick in new French oak for an extended amount of time. The Repo goes from 3 months to about 10 months, and then the Añejo is about a year to about a year and a half, and then we just blend everything for consistency. So it's, you know, again, it's I love it. I think it's a, you know, it's a unique interpretation of tequila. I think tequila is much like any other products. You have, it's good to see people doing different things, because I think if everybody is continually doing the same thing, you don't have any diversity in the category.
And, sure.
You know, everybody has their favorite style of tequila. Everybody has their favorite brands. My thing is education. I'm all about trying to just explain what we do and how we do it and why we do it. And as a result, that's what we get is this particular product. So,
yeah, I mean, like, I'm glad you said that, because first of all, I really like Corzo tequila, but what you were saying about the education on the different styles of spirits of like one particular category is really important, because you said like everyone has their brand that they like. They may not know why they like it. They may have, and you never know as a bartender, like, or even as a person repping for a brand, why they like the like a tequila or a gin or a vodka or a whiskey. Hell, even the whole spectrum of spirits. Like, why do you drink that? Why do you drink vodka when there are all these other things? Or why do you drink whiskey when you might like rum, or like, you know, right, whatever it is? But it's definitely, there's definitely like a need for the education of these different spirits, and even in that certain class of different spirits in their own. So as a bartender, I mean, like, the cool thing with you is you work with these brands, but you also are a proprietor of 1534 in Soho, and it's a great bar. And like, that's one cool thing that, of many, that I really respect about you as a bartender and a brand manager, is that you are really into the education side of it, you know. And you have to, I mean, like, especially because if you get somebody coming in and they're like, I'll take an Absolut and cranberry, and you're like, okay, sure, have you had like Tito's or, you know, whatever, like, hey man, try this out. I mean, obviously you're not going to taste much of it when you start throwing like
right
fake-ass cranberry juice on top of it, but you know what I mean?
No, but I you touched on it. I mean, I think a lot of bartenders forget that that one of their roles is to help educate the general public. Sure. You know, I don't call my customers that come in there like clients or guests. I mean, they're friends of the establishment. And, you know, when they come in to drink, they're looking for an experience. And I think when you can sit down and talk to them and educate them about different things, because most people come in, they're not really as educated as you or I. I mean, that's, and there's people at home that like are really into spirits and stuff like that, but that's not the majority of people. So when they come into your venues, they're looking for a reason to drink. And if you can sit down and explain to them like, all right, well, you know, hey, I really like Grey Goose, or I really like Belvedere. All right, that's cool. Nothing against that. But have you tried something else? You might tell me that you don't like gin. Well, everybody at one point didn't like gin. Everybody had...
Oh, we all went through the Snoop Dogg phase.
Everybody had really...
Had like Seagram's or some shitty.
You just have really bad gin and you're just like turned off for life. But once you know,
same thing with tequila too.
Oh yeah, I mean, hell, like Jose Cuervo ruined majority of people off tequila and mezcal. I mean, mezcal with the worm for years. There was like, you know,
or with the scorpion.
I've
eaten many a scorpion off the blade of a switchblade.
There you go. That's hardcore right there. But no, you know, and I think it's if people are, you know, if you know what you're talking about and you can do it in a proper way, like there's nothing worse than having somebody jam something down your throat. Like, oh, you've got it like this because of that. Like, this is the best product ever. Like, okay, like you're really into it. You're really educated, but there's a way of doing it that I think, you know, people will respect. And if you, I think majority of people are very open to trying new things and getting into it. You have to do it. And when you can do that properly, it makes my job better. I love that component of it. I love then being able to teach my staff how to do that, because I think a lot of young guys in this industry, the patience level is not there. And so they have the components of education, they're learning, but then when the person doesn't want to like really bite, they get a little impatient, or impatient, I should say. Impatient is not a word. Impatient with them and are really like quick to like almost go on the defensive, you know. And at the end of the day, like this person's wanting to put money in your pocket, you know, they're willing to put money in the register and tip you. Understand that first, and then let them allow you to go where you want to go. Don't try to force, you know, stuff down their throat, because they're gonna fight it.
But so. Also, it's a point of service. It's like you as a bartender, you can. Just to expand on your point, it's like, so you've got the person who likes Bombay White Label, you know, and which I actually like.
Oh, Bombay Jay is great.
Yeah. So, you know, if there's something new, like for instance, Oxley, you know, it's like, you can be like, all right, put these side by side, just like taste them and, you know, not be a jerk about it, but like, tell me which one you like more. And they'll be like, oh, I like this one more. This is Bombay Dry. And they'll be like, oh, wait a minute. No, that's Oxy. You know, like, there are certain things, like, and as far as, like, the cost for the bar, for the house, it's like, dude, if you set up three, like, a flight of, like, tiny pours of, like, whiskey or rum or whatever, and it's like, oh, I really like this one. And you're like, oh, well, that's Eldorado 15 year, or, you know, whatever it is. And then, like, oh, thanks for showing me that. They're going to not only be stoked that you, like, turn them on to something new, but they'll also like come back to your bar just based on that. And that might have been one person that was just coming in that one day.
Yeah, and you know it, and then you've retained somebody for, you know, who knows how long. It's funny because I feel like, you know, being in this industry and working on a couple different sides of it, I find that the average person, the consumer, is more enthusiastic about learning than
they're at these certain types of bars for a reason.
For a reason, you know. If I just want to drink, I'm not going, you know, let's say I'm just walking by and I feel like I'm just thirsty and I want to drink, I'll stop in any regular bar. I'm not going to a specific destination for a reason. Like, if there's a game on, I'll go watch at a sports bar. If I'm going to dinner, I'll have a drink at a restaurant. But, you know, you go into our establishments or a cocktail bar or something like that, you're going there for the purpose of having a cocktail and having this experience that people have read about and talked about. And I find that the consumers that come in, the guests, the patrons of our establishment, are more enthusiastic about learning than I think they get credit for. And I actually find it more difficult to kind of like talk to bar managers and other beverage directors about products, because
you can say nerds.
No, not nerds. I'm talking about people who just run establishment. Yeah. I think that they get very. It's almost like a territorial thing. I mean, bartenders were very territorial. As it is with regards to our establishment, so we're very inclined to
maybe, but I feel not, like it's
not everybody, but there are times like there's people who I guess they're reluctant. I'll say reluctant to really kind of like sit down and do like a flight and kind of really, you know, figure out why do you carry five different rums. You know, like I remember when I was going in with a rum brand that I was working with for a very long time. You know, going into establishments and you see 18 flavored vodkas, some carrying five different styles of orange vodka, and yet you had four rums, and you're like, why are you carrying five different flavors of orange vodka in right. four rums that are completely similar in style? Like, you know, the categories of each style of spirit are so diverse, and all it takes is, you know, opening your mind a little bit and understanding that Jamaican rum tastes like this, Barbados rum tastes like that, Highland tequila tastes like that, Lowland sure. tequila tastes like that, and then expounding upon that to understand that there's differences between these products for a reason. And if, as I said before, if they all taste the same, we would only need to have five products on our back bar.
Yeah, sure. So. I mean, that's a really good point, actually. It's something that I think about, and I'm sure you think about, like, of course, like when you're setting up a bar, it's like, why would you have six different versions of the same product, but a lot of times the same brand? It's like, why would you have everything by one brand?
Right.
You pick the one or two you like. I mean, like, unless, of course, it's Van Winkle, then, of course, you want as much.
Then you want as many as possible.
But, I mean, like, that's something that I really respect about brands like Maker's Mark. They never did, well, except for the 46, but that's very recent, you know. Like, it was always just Maker's Mark. There weren't any age statements, you know, that were different from the other. It was just Maker's Mark. Here we go. This is our product. Like it. You know, and the same thing with, like, you know, Oxley and Corso. Like, of course, you've got three different age expressions, but you have that with every tequila brand.
Right.
So, I mean, like, that's, to me, it's like, if you can do, like, one thing really, really well, then do that really well. Don't start, like, because when people start going off to these different expressions and
it gets crazy at times. I mean, you see, like, the new trend in tequila, for example. You know, people are doing the clarified añejos and or trying to do, like, these, I mean, I think extra añejo as a category is great and it's moving up, but you know, you're seeing different things in tequila. And, you know, it's great to see people trying to push the borders of what's going on, because you know, what else can be done at times. But, you know, some of it's a little gimmicky and it can be a little bit much, and you're like, really? Like, you're taking this and you're gonna clarify it?
Yeah.
And so,
well, it's fun to play around, but
no, it is. I mean, that's what makes
important
our
important to get down to business.
Right, I mean, that's what makes our industry exciting, is that, you know, there's every day there's something new that comes out, and there's somebody who's trying to get you to try it and play around. And every bartender who's now moved into making spirits on their own are trying to make something that we as fellow bartenders want and appreciate. I mean, there's a lot of guys that we know who've started their own company solely on to distill products that are geared towards the bartender and stuff like that. So I'm excited about that, because it's an entrepreneurship that I didn't see coming in our industry. Yeah. And it's great to see guys who didn't want to go into the whole owning a bar or running a bar going into that realm, because it kind of starts opening doors for more of us to, like, okay, well, maybe if after a couple of years of bartending, I don't really want to open up my own spot, maybe, and I still want to stay in this, maybe there's an avenue at that side of things. So,
well, speaking of opening a bar and new and exciting things, you just dropped your new cocktail menu yesterday at 1534.
I did, yep.
And you're going to be there tonight.
I will be there tonight.
Yeah. Cool, man.
So if you're around and you want to come by and try one of the many new cocktails that we have there, please feel free to do. We're on 20 Prince Street between Elizabeth and Mott, below Jacques' Bistro, which is upstairs, catty corner to Cafe Havana. And I will be the good-looking gentleman behind the bar with a semi-shaved beard. So
awesome. Justin, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
I appreciate it.
It's been a really awesome time talking to you, and I can't wait to come to your bar tonight and try some of these new drinks.
Appreciate it, man. Well, thanks for having me, and looking forward to the next time, man.
Cheers. All right, cool. Check out 1534. I'm Damon Bolte. We'll see you next week on the Speakeasy. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Yes, he's high. Man, he's higher than a kite. That cat is high. Look at that look in his eye.